What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
Yeah. Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Name better than you can the things he won't be, but what will he be? Well, how will you know when he gets to you?
Don't worry, I'll know. For I've imagined every bit of him, from his strong moral fiber to the wisdom in his head, to the homey aroma of his pie.
You have wished yourself a small town Galahad, the breakfast eating four button type.
And I shall meet him when the time is ripe. I'll know when my love comes along. I won't take a chance, for just what I need, not some fly-by-night Broadway romance.
And you'll know at a glance by the two pair of pants.
I'll know by his calm, steady voice.
Hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Melissa Davis is working the board. Jim Arnold, the owner of Conn's Fine Wines and Spirits, is sitting here with me. Who you're just hearing right now is actress and singer Gene Simmons. No, not that oily reptilian guy from Kiss, but two-time Academy Award nominee Gene Simmons. That's her with Marlon Brando singing I'll Know, from the film musical Guys and Dolls. She died last week, as I found out at the end of last week's show, and quite a career of stage, screen, and television. Among some of her credits, Great Expectations back in 1946, Black Narcissus. She was Ophelia to Laurence Olivier's Hamlet in 1948 and won a supporting actress nomination for that. The Robe, the actress, of course, we just heard her as Mission Doll Sarah Brown in 1955's Guys and Dolls. The Big Country, Elmer Gantry, she was the good girl opposite bad girl Shirley Jones. And I love saying bad girl Shirley Jones. She was, of course, in Spartacus. She received a Best Actress nomination in 1969 for The Happy Ending. A lot of TV, North and South. She was in a TV version of Inherit the Wind that I really liked. And the last notable film back in 1995, she was one of the older ladies in How to Make an American Quilt. But we say salute to Gene Simmons. Thank you for your work. Okay. I had to do that.
Were there any young women in How to Make an American Quilt?
Winona Ryder.
Okay.
there was the Winona section, and then the Ellen Burstyn section, and then Gene Simmons. So, we got lots of things to do. We got to talk with Jim Arnold, of course. Our Wine Fest is coming up next week, so we wanted to have him in and talk about some stuff. You'll hear my interview, almost an exclusive, but Nuvo got one too, and that's okay. My chat with director Peter Bogdanovich, who is in town tonight. He'll be introducing the Orson Welles film Touch of Evil at 7 o'clock at the IMA. I will be there. Hopefully you will be as well. And hopefully next week you'll be listening to the show and then hightailing it to Indie Wine Fest at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. I know I will. Are you going, Melissa?
Yes, I will. I have to interview on stage.
And so will I.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I told them to let me go early.
Okay.
So I could sample the rest of the evening.
Later, yeah.
And hang out with Jim.
Well, they said they were going to do live interviews, and I was like, well, I don't do live interviews.
Yeah, me either.
Well, I'm kidding.
Good to have you here.
What am I doing here? Oh, jeez.
Well, let's get started. We got three quick reviews that we want to talk about. Yes, finally, after 7 years, two controversial films as a director, and one hell of a trip to a bar which led to altercations with California police, Mel Gibson is back on the screen in the thriller Edge of Darkness, based on a BBC miniseries, now made into a two-hour film. He plays a Boston cop with a Boston accent, investigating the murder of his daughter. And, of course, things are not as they seem. Give a listen. Well, we are having some technical difficulties. Let me put it this way. You hear Mel Gibson and his Boston accent, which is actually decent, with his daughter. Daughter gets shot, and let's just say Mel's not going to stop until he finds out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we could like beat each other up in here and stuff, and that, give people a gist.
You have experience and size over me. I have Melissa. So, no, I it might be a fair fight. Okay, let me get the snarky comment out of the way. Apparently, with this movie, there are no Jews in Boston.
Oh.
Or female police officers, because one of the all-time great new nicknames came out of that little altercation. All right, it's directed by Martin Campbell, who gave us Casino Royale and other action films. And how are we doing over there? Do we have it? We might just have it. Okay. Who else is in this? Danny Houston and Ray Winstone round out the cast as well. Here we go.
Hi, Dad. I'm going to come home for a few days. I love you.
Perfect.
Waiting here forever.
You're always early.
Are you starting already? Come on, let's go home. Seeing someone?
Yeah. I wish you had someone.
You're my girl.
Craven!
Still a lot of unanswered questions, but it appears Detective Thomas Craven was the intended target.
This is someone armed and dangerous.
What do you think I am?
How's he dealing with it personally?
Hey, Emma, Craven's phone. Hello?
Mr. Craven, we have things to talk about.
Like your name and what you're doing here?
Like who shot your daughter.
I want to know what my daughter did here.
What she did was classified.
Emma Charlotte Craven was flagged as a possible threat to the United States of America.
My daughter was not the type.
You know, everybody talks about power, but they don't really understand.
Cases like these are never solved. You just never can connect A to B.
How do you know that?
Because I'm usually the guy that stops you connecting A to B.
Gonna follow me to the city of Boston. Welcome to hell.
What's it feel like?
We need to abort right now.
It's too late. It's already been done.
I'm not gonna arrest anyone. I never do.
You are out of your depth and far from your jurisdiction.
My daughter was Emma Craven.
I'm the guy with nothing to lose. Fasten your seatbelt.
Well, you had better decide whether you're hanging on the cross or banging in the nails.
And he'll film it slow motion for 45 minutes. I'm sorry.
And I think banging in the nails would be better.
Probably. Yeah, I think so. But, you know, Mel Gibson, he would film it and film it in slow motion. Or as my buddy Ed Johnson, I'll never forget one of the all-time great intros to his scathing review of The Passion of the Christ. This is a religious snuff film. But enough about that. Let's talk about this one. It's been over seven years since Mel Gibson starred in the film, the last one being, for you trivia buffs, anyone? M. Night Shyamalan's Signs.
Oh, that was a good movie. I like that
movie. It was not bad, where he was a farmer. And at that time, ladies, didn't you wish all farmers looked like Mel Gibson?
No.
No. Even before his Not Your Cup of Tea, even before things got ugly in his world?
Not my thing, but okay, that's other fine. People may.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Some, but...
Some ladies like him.
I guess.
Heard. Yeah.
And they're very forgiving. All right. So this is based on a BBC miniseries. So remember State of Play last year? It's kind of like that, where you take a long miniseries and condense it down into a two-hour picture. This is the new, obviously, new phase in Mel Gibson's acting career. There is no humor in this. I mean, there's maybe one line, but this is not the happy, grinning, Lethal Weapon Mel Gibson. This is stone face, bullet, not going to stop until he gets his answers, Mel Gibson. And the story, well, the problem is you can figure out the puzzle. His daughter works for a governmental thing, so it's a corporate and governmental cover-up. So when you have two of those factors together, it's just going to make things very difficult and very corrupt. But once you figure out the pieces of the puzzle, which is usually if you're halfway through the film, you can start to figure out how this is going to end. And then you just got to go through what then turns out to be, even though it's well shot by Martin Campbell, it's a revenge film. It's a simple revenge film. I am fascinated to see the miniseries of this. And I say that was probably the best thing about State of Play, was that it did make me want to see the BBC miniseries and see how this goes out. Gibson has some decent moments, especially when dealing with he keeps seeing his daughter, in his house.
And flashbacks, and, kind of.
Well, not flashbacks, but mirages, I guess, is a good way of putting it. You know, while he's shaving, while he's at the park, and I feel a little better as a film critic and as a human being because the daughter's name is Emma, and it didn't bug me at all. So he's all right. Actually, the better performance is Ray Winstone, who plays he looks like one of these cleaner types, like Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction and other things. And he's got a much more complex story than just being a cleaner for hire or a Michael Clayton. Danny Houston gets to be oily, still starting to look and sound more like his dad, John Houston, as the years go on. There aren't ridiculous action scenes, and there aren't ridiculous gunfights. The violence is fairly quick and to the point. But overall, it returns Mel Gibson to the screen on a minor note. Like I said, the script is probably its weakest link. And
so you're not on the edge of your seat.
No. I'm not. I'm sure there will be. I'm sure tonight it's going to be lots of people cheering and nobody throwing matzah at the screen. They might. I don't know. Whitefish, possibly. A little Manischewitz. Do you have any No. I got a feeling. And the question was, I was talking with a colleague, was, will this overtake Avatar over the weekend? And I don't think it will. I bet it'll have a strong opening.
His name pulls pretty good, though.
He does, but let's think about, what's he done in the last few years besides get in trouble?
And look older.
He does. There's a lot of that. I mean, that kind of, happy-go-lucky charm that the ladies, not Melissa, got turned on to. It's not that. Okay, she just gave herself a shudder. She just gave you that.
He's like my mom's guy.
The mop of hair from Lethal Weapon is gone.
He's my mom. I was like 7 when Lethal Weapon came out. He's my mom's dude, not
so
mine.
You can't do that. Sophia Loren was my dad's girl, and I still like her. Granted, she's 80 now, but okay. We're tapping into Melissa's guy ethics. That's a different show, which we'll have on HD2.
Point. But you know what? I actually think his life's taken more of a serious turn, so I can see where some of that lightheartedness would be gone.
So I'll be intrigued to see what he does next. Hopefully he'll do something slightly better, but I got a feeling for a lot of people this is going to be satisfying enough. It's Friday night Chinese food, I guess. So overall, here's my response to Edge of Darkness.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Of course. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to get through a couple of movies on DVD, and then we will have my chat with Jim Arnold and my almost exclusive interview with Peter Bogdanovich. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
That town is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis.
And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our on-track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Hi, Lolly. I'm Matthew Sosi, along with Melissa Davis and Jim Arnold, owner of Cannes Fine Wines and Spirits. Of course, Indy Wine Fest is next week in about 7 days and about an hour and a half. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Melissa's also on Facebook. Are you on Facebook, Jim? Or should we not just brag about that?
I'm on Facebook.
Is Cons on Facebook?
Cons has a Facebook fan page also.
Ooh.
What's that? I'd like to fan it. What is it?
Cons Fine Wines.
Oh, okay. Are you guys on Twitter?
No.
No.
That's maybe on tasting
I haven't moved
night.
Into this decade yet. Yeah. I'm still in the last decade.
Yeah, I don't
know
about tweeting. My VCR still blinks noon.
Twitter's fun. It's actually, and if you're a business, it's a great way to let people know about specials and I don't know. Yeah.
I got on the stuff. Facebook thing because, of course, I have teenage kids and then I tried to go after it a little bit more.
Okay, Jim, she just consulted you, so that's $100. or a bottle
me.
Of Pinot Grigio.
And a bottle of wine, yeah.
Okay, ethics. Okay, thanks, Ball State. And, of course, Peter Bogdanovich is going to be at the IMA, as will I, tonight at 7 o'clock to introduce the Orson Welles masterpiece, Touch of Evil, so be there. All right, there's a lot of films that came out on DVD, and, well, I only wanted to talk about two, because Surrogates and Saw 6 and the Michael Jackson movie. Now let's move on. This is a film that opened one of the Midwestern premieres at the Heartland Film Festival. It's the Jane Campion film Bright Star, which is about poet John Keats and the love of his life, who happens to live next door. Jane Campion, of course, gave us the piano. Abby Cornish and Ben Whishaw are the lovers in question. And Paul Schneider's in this film as well, which I'll gush about in just a little bit. But here's a sample of cinematic poetry, literally.
My dearest lady, I'm now at a very pleasant cottage window, looking onto a beautifully hilly country, with a view of the sea. The morning is very fine. I do not know how elastic my spirit might be, what pleasure I might have in living here if the remembrance of you did not weigh so upon me. Ask yourself, my love, whether you are not very cruel to have so entrammeled me. So destroyed my freedom. For myself, I know not how to express my devotion to so fair a form. I want a brighter word than bright, a fairer word than fair. I almost wish we were butterflies and lived but 3 summer days. 3 such days with you I could fill with more delight than 50 common years could ever contain.
Okay, Jim and I were talking off. So first off, he asked me if I liked it by giving me thumbs up and thumbs down, which we're a thumb-free zone here at Film Sociology. But I, of course, asked as a husband and a guy, well, you have anyway, you know, is this something that your wife is going to want to probably rent?
Yeah. Oh, I
and are you going to be bored stupid if you? If
well,
you
would
watch
you make it a full fledged chick flick, or is it?
No, I don't think it's this is a chick flick. This is not all. I guess not all period pieces are chick flicks, and not all chick flicks are period pieces. It's a nice light, despite the content, because Keats in this film becomes ill. You know, it's that kind of love story, Finding Neverland. He coughs in the first reel, which means, well, I don't want to give it away if you don't know that rule. But they have Abbie Cornish and Ben Whishaw, and I need to double-check all the stuff they've done, because they always put their most recent work on, and Ben Whishaw was in The International, and that's not very flattering, and Abbie Cornish was in Stop Loss, and nobody saw that. But I do like Jane Campion. I mean, it's nice to see her back doing period pieces. Of course, she did The Piano, Portrait of a Lady. You know, the last few films she's done, like In the Cut and Holy Smoke, have not been particularly good, in my opinion. But they have some nice chemistry together. The one actor I do want to talk about, and I need to credit my buddy at Nuvo, Ed Johnson Ott, who was adamant that the fellow film critics in our circle go see this film because of the performance of Paul Schneider. Paul Schneider plays Keats's not right-hand man, not chaperone, but his writing partner. And early on in the film, very antagonistic and very verbally troublesome, let's put it this way, between he and the young lady. And the first couple scenes, you think, okay, typical token masterpiece theater douchebag. You have to have one. It's either a fop or a blowhard or somebody like that that just has to put a wrinkle in everything. And as the film goes on, you're wondering, is he jealous of Keats? Does he want the girl? Is he jealous of Keats's writing? Is he just driving a wedge between these two people? What is his agenda? And it seems to change with as the film goes on, and he becomes much more complex. And so not only do we have a really nice relationship, and of course, because it's Jane Campion, it's beautifully shot, but you have this fascinating third party in this movie. So, and I know Ed is hoping he gets the Best Supporting Actor nomination. I agree. And I looked, he was in the Assassination of Jesse James. The thing I first noticed him in was Lars and the Real Girl, the Ryan Gosling blow-up romance film, and he was the brother in that. So be on the lookout, I guess, for Paul Schneider. Not Paul Schrader, and not Dwayne Schneider.
Not Paul Schaefer.
And not Paul Schaefer. Paul Schneider. So be on the lookout for this guy, because he's really good. I'll call your wife and say, you guys will be renting this. So.
Well, no, she'll get it anyway.
She'll get it. Okay.
Whether.
Well, good. We'll tell her it has the Film Sociology seal of approval. Here's what I think of Bright Star. And we go into a film. I know Melissa will eventually rent this, and I can't wait to hear what she has to say about it. I know Roxanne is excited about this. The roller derby film Whip It, starring Ellen Page, and the directorial debut of Melissa's arch nemesis.
She's
not. Are you sure?
We'll have to wait and find out.
Well, they're not together, so she can't be that high up on the list. Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore is in this.
What's wrong with Drew Barrymore?
Oh.
She jilted my friend. I don't know.
Okay, we'll. All right, now we have to do a Film Sociology After Dark, like an off-record session. Hey, can we have it at your place?
Sure.
Melissa and I will be tasting several spirits and talking off the air.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Sounds fun.
We've got to work on that. Anyway, Ellen Page is a young girl who whose world opens up to her and wants to break out of her small town Texas life by getting into the rock'em sock'em world of ladies roller derby.
If I could have dinner with anyone, it would have to be God.
My mom is going to kill me.
It says temporary.
Also from Bodine, Miss Bliss Cavendish.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm sorry that these pageants don't live up to your high moral standards, but there's a lot you can learn from them no matter what you go on to be in life.
Out of all the places to go to in the world, who would come to Bodine?
So, what are you, like, alternative now?
Alternative to what?
What is this? Roller derby?
Welcome to Skate Night at the Warehouse.
I just want to tell you all that you're my new heroes.
Well, put some skates on. Be your own hero.
The last time I wore skates, they had Barbies on them.
I want to be her.
Yes, I do.
You could be our mascot.
I'm going to change my work schedule because I want to take an SAT class on Tuesdays, Thursdays.
I'm impressed.
I like smart girls. That's why I married your mama. Well, that and I knocked her up. I'ma do
the things that I want. Looking good, Barbie. I ain't got
a thing to. You can make out with him, but that is it.
Has anyone ever thrown up on the track before?
Yeah.
Get ready to meet your newest Girl Scout,
Babe Ruthless!
This is your SAT class?
I am in love with this.
I cannot take losing the chance for our kid to be happy.
We came in second out of two teams.
That's right, celebrate mediocrity. That's fantastic.
Rounding out this cast, first off, the in this movie, if you have Daniel Stern and Marsha K. Harden, you get Ellen Page. Interesting. Kristen Wiig is in this. Jimmy Fallon. And by the way, this is a much better film involving Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore than Fever Pitch. Drew is in this as well. She has a small role. My favorite female stunt lady, Zoe Bell, has a role in this. Zoe Bell, of course, most notably, she was Uma Thurman's stunt double in Kill Bill, and she had the great role in Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof. She was a girl on the hood. And fresh off the stage, or maybe under a rock, Juliette Lewis is in this
I
picture.
I love Juliette Lewis.
Do you?
She's awesome.
Do you have her music?
I have listened to it. It's really cool.
Really?
It's. Okay. I mean, I don't know if you'd like it, but it's like, rah, it's very like,
how'd that go
rock,
again?
Rah, you know. Like that general
yes.
genre of music.
G-R-L-R-R-L-L, girl.
Right, okay, right. No, right. It's real, like, punk kind of, but a little bit of rock. I don't know. I think she's really cool.
I don't know if you can be punk if you have an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah, you can.
Win an Academy Award nomination? Really?
Sure. Sure.
because Melissa said so, it's there.
And she's a great actress, too. She really is.
Nice. Well, it's nice to see her in something because it's been a while. And
she's busy rocking out. She's busy being
rocking
a rock
America.
Star.
Yeah. And she plays the kind of antagonist, the veteran of the league who gets a little jealous of Ellen Page's newfound success. Did you see Bennett like Beckham?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
That's kind of like this, but with roller skates. But, and I know because snarky film critics compare movies to other movies, that's what we do. But it's just a nice, I mean, Ellen Page is very good, I think, as we've obviously learned from her so far early career. I was wondering what she was going to do past Juno. I was wondering when she's going to be able to stop being a teenager in her films. Well, it's going to be a while,
she
apparently.
She looks so young,
she
too.
She does.
Yeah.
Well, which is what made Hard Candy so strong. Mm. But she's good in this. Everybody in it is fine. The roller derby footage is actually pretty good. And it's just got a nice, sweet little tone to it. So, and it's, you know, a little girl power. Yeah. Which
kind of a
feel-good
movie.
It is a feel-good movie. It just happens to have women on skates with tattoos, elbow each other, and there's
and,
nothing
and
wrong
what's
with
wrong with that.
Nothing's wrong with that. No, not a thing. So anyway, it's out there. Go rent it. And now I'm afraid, Melissa, I'm going to expect a report from you
all
soon
right,
about this.
All right.
Because this is what I think of Whip It.
Now that was a good movie.
It was. Okay. One other note before we get into the interview and chat portion of Film Sociology. You know, as you heard earlier, I paid tribute to actress Gene Simmons, who died. And this is also the show you get for Hollywood obituaries. Apparently, we need to raise a glass and say that now, officially, Miramax Films is dead.
Mm.
So there, it's been officially laid to rest. Of course, Bob and Harvey Weinstein right. left to make the Weinstein Company, and I think they just put out their last film. So they're done.
Hmm.
And just think about Miramax brought in everybody from Kevin Smith, Quentin Tarantino, Anthony Michaelia, films like My Left Foot, Clerks, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Crying Game, Piano, Trainspotting, Swingers, Shakespeare in Love, English Patient, all of these, The Queen, Doubt, Diving Bell and the Butterfly. I think, I think their last film might have been, or one of the last films was Extract, Mike Judge's film, which you can hear next on Fresh Air with Mike Judge. It's a repeat, but it's still fun listening to Mike Judge.
It was really funny.
I think they should have Mike Judge on once a year,
yeah,
whether they're promoting anything or not. It's like when on the Carson show, when they would bring out Michael Caine or Peter O'Toole or Richard Harris, whether they were promoting anything or not, but they would tell old drunk stories. Yeah. I think they should just bring Mike Judge out to talk about people he's seen on the street.
So did they have a number of bombs in a row? And that's part of it was lost, or what happened?
Yeah, I mean, they had some films like The Queen and Doubt and Diving Bell and the Butterfly, but films like Eagle vs. Shark, Smart People, which had Ellen Page, Blindness, Adventureland didn't quite live up to expectations, Sherry, and Extract, even I do have to say this is from The Onion, but Extract did make money.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a huge hit, but it did make money this time around.
Boy, a lot of those early ones you named were great movies.
Yeah, that was an incredible run, and this helped shape independent film, and then everybody got their own, every studio then got their own independent division, and now those are starting to go away. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next when it comes to independent films over the next few years. So thank you for all the memories, Miramax, and thank you for the movies. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then you're going to hear my chat with Peter Bogdanovich, and then we're going to talk movies and spirits and spirits. Movies with spirit, not spiritual movies. That's a whole other thing. With Jim Arnold of Cannes Fine Wines. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Naptown is nowhere near as sleepy as it sounds.
I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis.
And we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our On Track artist, featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
Oh, Roger! We're not alone.
We've got guests.
You've got what?
Guests. Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Matthew Soucy. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, and I think starting Monday, well, not starting, but about Monday, about lunchtime, this show is available as a podcast, so you'll be able to hear this week's show on Monday. Well, we have Jim Arnold, owner of Cannes Fine Wine and Spirits. Of course, we have Wine Fest coming up next week at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. Melissa and I and Jim will all be there. Maybe we'll get a table and recreate this magic. This would be fun with the giant glass. And but
is that a promise or a threat?
Yes. But before we get to Jim, I do want to mention once again that tonight, 7 o'clock at the IMA Theater, at the Toby Theater in the Indianapolis Museum of Art, they are showing the Orson Welles masterpiece. Yes, he had more than one. Touch of Evil, and it's going to be introduced by acclaimed film director Peter Bogdanovich, the man who gave us such films as The Last Picture Show, Paper Moon, What's Up Doc, Nickelodeon, Daisy Miller, At Long Last Love, Mask.
He did Mask.
Oh, he did The Thing Called Love.
Yeah, that was great.
Remember that? The Nashville movie with a young River Phoenix, a young Sandra Bullock, and Samantha Mathis.
Okay, yeah.
Dermot Mulroney. Mm-hmm. He also did Noises Off. He did Targets with Boris Karloff. The 4-hour cable documentary, Tom Petty Running Down a Dream.
Ooh, cool.
The
Jeez.
Cat's Meow with Kirsten Dunst. So lots and lots of films. And I got a chance to speak with him last week. That's actually how I sounded when he called.
Did you geek out a little bit?
I did geek out. You're going to hear it. You'll
it's
hear a little bit.
Of,
I know. However, it didn't turn into the Chris Farley show.
Chris Farley.
Do you remember when you made the Last Picture Show? That was awesome. It wasn't quite that, but you'll hear at the end of the interview something I say that, well, you should never start a conversation like this. That's why I end it with this. Here is my semi-exclusive chat with director Peter Bogdanovich. Tell us about the first time you got to see Touch of Evil.
It opened in 1958 in New York. I was living in Manhattan. It opened on the either the top or the bottom half of a double bill, which is the way pictures that the studios didn't think much of opened those days. It opened in a lot of theaters at once, which in those days was an insult. Now it's the way every film is done, but in those days, if you opened a film on a double bill meaning two films, an A picture and a B picture, playing at the, what they used to call the neighborhood theaters or the NABs, that was considered that the picture was being thrown away, and that's how it opened in New York. I went to the first screening. It was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I went with a good friend of mine. We enjoyed it. We loved it. Just slipped out, and there was hardly anybody in the theater, and the reviews were poor. The same day, my father brought, same day, just a couple of days later or before, my father was a painter and an artist and kind of an intellectual type, and he used to bring back art magazines. He'd go and buy art magazines. He brought back a French newspaper called ARTS. And on the front page was a long piece by François Truffaut with a picture from Touch of Evil and calling it Welles' masterpiece. So I thought, well, there's a little difference between Paris and New York, I guess.
Were you a Welles fan already at the time?
Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't have gone to see it until early in the morning.
Okay, fair enough. I say, how much impact did he have on you as a filmmaker? How much influence did he have on you as a filmmaker? I mean, obviously, besides enough coming to Indianapolis to talk about it.
Well, I mean, he had more influence on me as a personality than directly as a filmmaker because we're very different in terms of the way we make pictures. But he opened my vision a lot. And made me realize that nothing had to be set in stone. You could prepare a picture, but still leave yourself open to the possibility that something better might come along on the day you're shooting or just before the camera turns. He kept to a kind of freshness with the actors. He also was very, very gregarious and open and funny on the set. Now, I was the same way, so we had that in common. But seeing Orson do it kind of validated it for me.
I think also his films were events, and also the fact that the filmmaker got to be a brand or a star product. And I remember as a kid, I mean, you were in the same boat with directors like Coppola and Scorsese. It was a Peter Bogdanovich film, no matter who was in it. The main thing was that it was your film as a director.
Well, that became the issue in the early 70s, late 60s, or mainly in the early 70s. I was the first filmmaker of my generation that got the billing of film by, which is a French or European billing. I didn't ask for it. They just gave it to me.
Hmm.
And I would have preferred a Peter Bogdanovich production, which I took on What's Up Doc and Paper Moon. But they gave me that, and it was in all the ads, and it was pretty big type. And it started the whole American tour thing over here.
Mm-hmm. Besides,
how did I feel about it? I felt a little intimidated by it, and didn't think about being in the forefront of anything. It just was the way it worked out.
Besides making cinema history, I know one of the things I've really appreciated is that you've been a teacher of cinema history with your books and the commentaries and the appearances and all the documentaries and whatnot. Was education always a part of your goal as an artist?
Never. It's just that I never thought of it as education. I thought of it as popularization. I thought I was keeping the flame alive of films that I liked, which pop culture, you know, has a short shelf life, and unfortunately, and I've come to realize how short the shelf life is. It's gotten shorter and shorter.
Now, if I'm going through my personal collection and stuff that I've done research on, have you done commentaries on all of your films that are on DVD?
I don't think I did one on Texas Will because it's not the version that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I did one on Noise Is Off because they didn't ask me. I don't think there is any commentary on that one.
Okay.
Which I wish there were because it's one of my favorites.
Well, you're always informative when you give the commentaries. And, you know, I, as a film, I guess, film host and film buff, you know, I go back to the word education. It is for me as far as learning what you did and how you did it. And what I've liked over the years with DVD was it was finally satisfying to hear the music of Bruce Springsteen in Mask, and last year to finally see Nickelodeon in black and white.
Yeah, if you enjoyed it, you can imagine how much I was so happy to get them right finally after 30 years or something.
I'm trying to remember. Do you know if At Long Last Love will ever make it on the DVD?
I don't know. It was such a disaster. The version that the good cut, which has been shown on television and exclusively, nobody ever saw the original release cut ever again. I guess it might. They have a very good print at Fox, very beautiful print. They just and people rent it occasionally. It was shown in a tribute to me in San Francisco, against my better judgment, but they liked it, so they showed it.
Well, I figured if a film like Mamma Mia could get made today, then that film would be worth looking at again.
That's what they said up in San Francisco, and the critic who'd seen it before re-reviewed it, re-evaluated it, thought it was pretty damn good. I don't know what I think of it. It was a good idea. It was compromised a bit, but I could do it better if I had to do it over again.
Okay. The museum that is hosting Touch of Evil, next month they're showing Last Picture Show. I wasn't sure if you knew that or not.
No, I didn't know that.
Well, they are, February 19th. And we had an art house theater in town a few years ago that closed, and their last movie they showed was The Last Picture Show.
That's appropriate.
Very appropriate, indeed. My gosh, that film is almost 40 years old, and it doesn't feel dated at all.
Thank you.
Yes. When was the last time you watched it?
Maybe a year and a half ago, I saw it with an audience. The certain pictures you make play the same way no matter what year or what audience. And that's a sure sign that it's going to last. I'm very proud to say that it played that the way it played when it opened.
And that was one of those films where, you know, it launched a lot of careers, obviously, with Jeff Bridges and Cybill Shepherd and Randy Quaid, and was able to, you know, put Ben Johnson and Cloris Leachman to a new level. Ellen Burstyn was in that, of course. You just look at on paper and you think, wow, you know, 10 years after that, you know, the budget would have been and their salaries would have been much, much more.
Oh, yeah. We made the picture film not for nothing. It was $1.3 million.
And that was a book that you a paperback that you picked up at a store?
That's how it started, but then I didn't buy it. Sal Mineo brought it, the same paperback, a few days later, and gave it to me, and I thought there must be something to this, so I guess I better read it. Sal always liked the book and thought he'd be good in it, but he was too old for it by the time he gave it to me. He thought I'd like it, which he was right, I did.
Jumping forward, a film that I really enjoyed, and I was curious about how you got involved with it, was the Tom Petty documentary, Running Down a Dream.
I love doing that. That was such fun. Well, Tom was wanting to make a 30th anniversary film, documentary, and he and a good friend of his, a producer named George Reculius, who was a friend of mine, were talking, and Tom said, who can we get to do the documentary? And George said, how about Bogdanovich? And Tom said, do you think we could get him? He said, I don't know, let me call him. So he called me and asked me if I'd be interested. And I didn't know much about Tom Petty, but I'm interested in things or know much about. Didn't know much about Texas either, so I knew he was a big name in rock and roll, and I said, sure, I'd be interested. Why are you asking me? He said, because Tom likes your stuff, and he thinks you'd be good to do it. I said, well, let's meet. So I flew out to California and met with Tom. We talked for 4 hours, and I said, okay, I know how to do it. I think I know how to do it. At least I know how to approach it, and I'd like to do it, and that was it.
I was impressed with how thorough it was, and despite its length, I wanted more.
Yeah, when you get the right rhythm for a picture, you can go on and on. It took us a long time to find the right rhythm for it, and once we got it, it just flows. I've seen it with audiences, on the big screen, and it's very exciting.
And I think of when Scorsese did The Last Waltz and Shine a Light, and Jonathan Demme's done Stop Making Sense and Heart of Gold. Does it change you as a filmmaker to go from concert music documentary to working on a feature? Does it change your mindset at all?
No, because it's a different kind of thing. I mean, the Tom Petty would have been impossible to make. It had to be digital. You couldn't cut that picture in the way I made, let's say The Last Picture Show or What's Up Doc or Paper Moon or even Mask or even The Catch Me Now. It can't be cut nor normally. You have to have digital editing in order to be able to do all that kind of fancy footwork, which the rock documentary requires. And, it took long enough with the way we were doing it. I can't imagine how you could do it before a digital cutting.
And how do you feel about digital?
Oh, I think it's fine. It speeds up the process. That's all.
Okay. What are you currently working on, either as a director or as an actor?
A little acting here and there, and some pictures. But I'm working on a few pictures as a director. I'm trying to put together a couple of pictures, and people are trying to get me to do a couple of things. I'm not sure what I'm going to do first, but I'll be doing something this year, probably in May or June. Not sure what, so I can't really tell you because I'm not 100% sure, but a very different kind of project.
Okay. And I guess because this is a film talk show, I'm curious what you've seen recently, whether it's old or new or either.
Well, I liked Fabulous Mr. Fox a lot. That was one of my favorite films this year.
Mine too.
I loved it. I thought Up in the Air was good. I liked Clooney a lot. I liked The Two Women.
Mm-hmm.
And what else is there? I haven't seen Avatar, and I haven't seen a lot of pictures. I enjoyed Robert Downey Jr. in Sherlock Holmes. And I haven't seen a lot of pictures.
Crazy Heart, by chance?
I thought Jeff was extraordinary, and the picture's charming.
I agree. He's
Jeff is just amazing. Great, great, great performance.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great actor. He's always been a great actor. I knew that the minute we worked with him way back when.
It's funny when people still call him underrated, even though he has 4 nominations and a 5th one probably on the way.
Well, he still is underrated because he's right up there among the best actors of his generation. I think everybody knows it, but the public.
I think Crazy Heart's one of his best works.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant.
But I really, really appreciate your time, Peter. And I guess I have to say, on behalf of all the male listeners of the show, thank you for the diving board scene in Last Picture Show.
Okay.
It helped out a lot of us, so.
I'm glad. Glad to be of service.
Peter Bogdanovich, thank you so much for being on Film Sociology.
Thanks, Matthew.
That's my chat with Peter Bogdanovich. He is at the IMA tonight at 7 o'clock to introduce Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. Now, Melissa's wondering, there's a diving board scene in the Last Picture Show. I know, you got to work on that. But basically, it's a private pool party amongst the high schoolers, and your initiation is that you have to strip on the diving board, and Sybil Shepherd did.
I see.
Yeah, 1970 Sybil Shepherd.
Oh, okay.
Your host is a pig, as you already. And speaking of which, hello, Jim Arnold. How are you? Thinking of 1970 Sybil Shepherd. Jim Arnold is the owner of Con Fine Wines and Spirits, and one of the big poobahs at next week's Indie Wine Fest, which is taking place at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. We hope you can make it out there. All three of us will be there in different combinations. Jim, how you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on today.
I appreciate you coming in and listening to all this silliness.
Oh, this is fun. Most of it's way over my head, but I was having a good time.
You're right up there with my producer.
It's all over my head.
She just pats me on the head and gives me the occasional cookie, and then I'm all right.
So we're normal. It's okay.
I'll take a glass of Chardonnay to go with this cookie. But so
and we'll have that at the tasting.
And how many different wines are going to be available?
I think somewhere in the tune of 400 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Enough probably that you could get one or two tastes.
You think?
Maybe.
Yeah. And as I've learned, and as I've been told by the smart one in my house, you know, try as many as you can. You don't have to try all of them.
But you're going to give it an effort, aren't you?
You're going to give it a good old Ball State try, boy. That's why she's driving. Do you have a wheelbarrow? No. And, of course, WFYI will be broadcasting live. We'll work first, but we'll be broadcasting live from the Indiana Roof Ballroom, and I'm sure you're going to be up there. We'll all be up there in one way, shape, or form. So
that could be pretty funny by the end of the evening.
No, you may think it's funny. Management will say, no, it's not.
Not so funny.
Not so funny. So tell us, what are some of the things that are going to be going on next week?
First of all, it's one of the best wine tasting events in Indiana. Not only are we going to have a huge turnout from the consumers, we're anticipating probably 1,000 people to come to the Indiana Roof that mm-hmm. night. It's next Friday night. But we've got a great selection of wines imported as well as wonderful assortment of tables of Indiana wineries.
Woo-hoo. We love our Indiana wines.
You know, it's I have to tell you, I've owned Conn's 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And in my early days, there wasn't a whole lot to brag about on Indiana wine. But I have to tell you, Indiana wine's come a long way, and there's a lot of very nice wines made now.
Indeed, absolutely. And your new location, but fairly – It's a nice space.
I think six times as big as the old store.
Yeah.
It's a little bit bigger. I still managed to make it as crowded as possible.
No, you do. I have to say, going into the old building, there was that worry about expanding your elbows too far. And you didn't go in with an umbrella. You didn't, you know, the old slapstick yeah. thing of turning around and, you know, five bottles go down the tubes.
Yeah,
so.
It was, I think I had some aisles in that store that were like 18 inches.
Something like that.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, I'm sure you're not. So it's like my office.
Yeah.
With
yeah,
papers, not with bottles.
You'd be shocked how many people say, I really miss that, though.
Yeah?
I mean, it was kind of a Handy Hardware. Do you remember that old store that was right across the street almost?
Cozy, right? It's cozy.
Like
yeah.
that cozy local mm-hmm. feel. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to still keep some of that, but on a little more grand scale.
Well, you still have quite a selection, and I mean, I'm not as worried about knocking over something, but there's still aisles and aisles and miles to go before you drink.
I think I carry close to 10,000 items.
Wow. Yep.
So, and of course, next week, proceeds if you buy wine at Wine Fest, how do they pick it up? I'm sorry.
Well, nobody buys the night of the event. You just place an order. Mm-hmm. And what we've decided to do is give 25% of the proceeds back to WFYI.
Thank you.
To help the great cause for this city.
Thank you.
And so really most all the pricing there is not only on sale for lower than I sell it at Conn's, but it's about the lowest prices in town. And then we're going to still give some more money away and try to create some excitement. And really a big part of that is to thank the wholesalers who are there pouring the wine and donating it and the wineries. Let's order some from them and thank them for coming and helping out at this event.
What do you like to drink?
Everything.
Okay, you're just like your just like
what
the
do
host
I like to
here.
Drink first thing in the morning. No, I'm
kidding. Oh, he's kidding. All right, let's try this. Well, this is a film show, so what have you been drinking lately?
I've been drinking a lot of Argentine wine, some okay. Malbecs. I am always a classic Bordeaux and Burgundy guy. My wife made wonderful lamb chops the other night, and we had a wonderful Bordeaux to go with that.
Cool.
But a lot of champagne, a lot of sparkling wine.
That's
Melissa's all about bubbly.
It can be an everyday thing. I think a lot of people associate it with New Year's Eve and Super Bowl and
events
parties. But, you know, Muddy Waters had a song it was called Champagne and Reefer because that's what he liked to wind down to after a show, and he gigged a lot. So,
well, and I'll tell you this. Really, most people don't realize what a great food wine champagne is, or sparkling wine for that matter.
I think a lot of people associate it with after dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's got wonderful acidity, which, let's face it, that's what wine is for, is to cleanse the palate for your next bite of food. And mm-hmm. champagne, there's nothing better.
So
good reason. Oh. I'll use that from now on.
That's right.
That's good.
Eat it for this, yeah.
Okay, so I guess film-wise, what have you seen recently? And it doesn't necessarily have to be wine and spirit involved, but what have you seen recently? Good, new or old or...
Gosh, I just saw Avatar. Of course, I took my son to that.
How'd you like Dances with Smurfs?
Yeah, really, no doubt. You know what? I liked the movie.
Yeah?
I don't know that I would have given it the money that it made, but I...
Well, apparently enough millions of people did.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. You know, would I pay to go see it a second time? I think I'd wait for it to come on video.
That's a 2-hour and 45-minute commitment, and if you're...
But it went by fairly quick, I thought.
I think when Sigourney... I hope I'm not giving much away, but when Sigourney Weaver bites it, I'm like, you guys got to get to that last fight scene pretty quick, please.
That's true.
But other than that...
I think you just may have ruined it for, like...
No. Oh, that's right. You know what's funny?
For both people that haven't seen it?
No, there have been a few people on Facebook that have fessed up. The two big confessions were, I didn't like Catcher on the Rye, mm-hmm. especially now that he's dead, and I haven't seen Avatar. Those are big... Mm. So, but you don't give them the look of disdain like you do me if I bring up a Christmas story.
So new. Oh, the Christmas story. Oh, he doesn't like the Christmas story. I believe that's un-American,
wow.
sir.
Yeah.
Who are you to talk about un-American activities?
Un-American.
Oh, jeez. Kind of like, I don't know, not buying liquor on Sundays. All right, let's move on, shall we?
Ooh.
So I guess I'm curious. What did you think of films like Sideways and Bottle Shock? Did you see Bottle Shock?
I did. I saw both Sideways and Bottle Shock.
I know a lot of people saw Sideways. Not enough people have seen Bottle Shock. And this was about the 1970s. I want to say there was an official or unofficial wine taste testing competition between the United States and France, and this was the first time ever the U.S. won.
Right, and I wouldn't say that it was when it actually happened. It wasn't meant to be against the two each other.
Uh-huh.
Against each other, they were just doing great wines, and some American wines got thrown in the mix.
Ah, okay.
Certainly they showed very well with a couple of them winning.
Exactly. And that kind of, for a lot of people.
I like that actor, too. I don't know his name in real life, but.
Alan Rickman, Dennis Farina, Bill Pullman.
The guy who plays Spurrier. The guy who's also on Harry Potter.
Yes, that's Alan Rickman.
Yeah, I like him.
But I mean, a lot of people were saying that was the moment that American, the floodgates opened for accessibility to American wines.
Absolutely, and it started the Pinot Noir craze in the U.S.,
heightened in holy Sideways.
Holy cow. I mean, it made Merlot go away and made Pinot Noir just everybody had to have it.
And
what a funny movie, though. Especially, you know, my parents don't drink a lot, so they, like, didn't get half the jokes, but I know those wine geeks. I know guys that are them. I know the guy covers his ear to smell the wine, you know? It was a beautiful thing.
I can taste acidity. You know, I'm still working on the palate as far as, you know, finding chocolate and oak and, you know, Virginia Madsen, which is a scent I always look for in a
drink
wine.
Drink what you like with what you like.
Exactly. And... Well, John Cleese had the great PBS special where they had a blind taste test of, like, six different wines ranging from 20 to 200 and, you know, shock and aghast when people weren't picking the 200 and they were picking the 20.
Sure. So that happens all the time.
Break out the Boone's Farm, right?
I don't know that would win.
Come on.
Anything that can start up your car, that's probably not a good thing. And, yes, you can have red wine with fish. I do.
Absolutely.
So, all right, next week is Indy Wine Fest at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. Tickets are still available. Go to WFYI.org. You can also go to Con's Fine Wines and Spirits at 54th and College?
54th and Keystone.
54th and Keystone. Sorry, 54th and Keystone.
That's okay.
So, but Jim Arnold, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, we've got lots of tickets left. Come on over and get some.
Yep, and here are some words to remember.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
On behalf of Melissa Davis, I'm Matthew Soucy, and on behalf of Jim Arnold, we'll see you at the IMA in about an hour. Next week, we will see you. We're at Indie Wine Fest. WFYI will be broadcasting at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. I'm Matthew Soucy. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.